I titled the shiur today, How to Feel It When You're Not Feeling It, which is a topic I think is extremely important, certainly to those of us who are in this room in yeshiva, where, we're I don't want to say pressured is the wrong word, but pressured to a davening by your rebbeim, by your madrichim, and it could be that you show up. I've even heard of such stories, I can't believe it's true, but I heard of such stories, people come in, they'll check next to their name, and they go back, and they're done. They did their yotzei, their davening, because they walked in the base madrash. Now, I have a hard time believing you'd wake up and go all the way there just to return, but it could be it is true, it could be that's possible. And it's not your fault 100%. It's partly your fault, but it's not all your fault. Because it happens to be that we grow up in a world when davening for us, as you went to shul, maybe on Shabbos when you're younger, was much more of a social scene. Opportunity to see people, to hang out with some friends. It was really just a communal event, community event. So to now to expect to go to yeshiva. Is this made the air conditioning? Let me know if it's... No, you don't want? Okay. Okay. Window's fine. Can we mind? Yeah, that window behind you, that one over there? Okay. For the first time, I'm sorry for opening up a Pandora's box of what the temperature should be like. Apologize. For the first time, maybe in your lives, you're expected, here, Benny, for you. You're expected to not only daven, but to actually mean it when you daven. You're supposed to be caring about what you daven. And the truth is, if you look around at ourselves, not at each other, but ourselves, most of us, I would say, struggle in this area. There are three types of people who don't, quote unquote, don't feel it. People who've never felt a strong daven in their lives, including Yom Noraim. They do it, they're supposed to, they fast, they go through the motions, but that's the extent of it. People who are on and off. You know, rarely they feel, but there are occasional times when they actually, you know, they hit the home run, it's a big davening, someone you're thinking about, very important, someone maybe the cholesterol is not well, and you have a lot of kavana for them maybe. The people who are there often, and once in a blue moon, they kind of like lose their focus and have a bad davening. Now, I'm sure there are those who are in the third category, as I mentioned, I'm sure there are those, but I'm really speaking more to the second and the first one, though I will address the third one as well. Now, people rarely or never feel close to God when they daven. It's probably because, as my guess, they don't really believe in God fully. That's my assumption. If you really believe in God fully, that He created you, that He's in charge of every breath that you take, I can't imagine not feeling the need to thank Him every morning. I can't imagine that. It would be an impossibility for someone who believes in a God and that God created you with your life source. At any moment in time, He snaps His fingers and we're done. And you don't feel the need to thank God. It's a possibility. So I can't imagine that that person must not believe in God. That's why he wouldn't feel the need to. And then I understand why you wouldn't want to daven. 100% I understand that. And I'm not going to address that person at all. Because that's a whole lengthy topic, which at some point in time, if you have any question about that topic, I'm happy to speak to you with many rebbeim as well about belief in God. You know, I wouldn't say proof, but strong arguments towards belief in God. There are many books written on the topic. But I'm assuming right now that most people in this room, if not everybody, has a level of belief in God already. Now, it's varying levels. Certain people, maybe like everything they do, they feel God in their presence. That could be. Some people only occasionally. But people believe in God, I'm assuming, in this room. And if I'm wrong, it's okay. Talk to me about it later on. It's just not for the topic of this year. Person number two. Again, in categories two and three, when it's just you don't always get there, you don't always feel it. A person who doesn't care to put, it's a lot of effort to daven. Requires you to wake up in the morning, first of all, which, I mean, everyone does at some point, hopefully. Otherwise, that means they're not alive anymore. But it's, you know, it's hard to get a bed in time, to get dressed, to go to daven. Other things you want to do. Very important things you might want to do. I'm not being facetious, I'm being serious. The important things that you want to do. And it may be hard to take the time and daven. You just don't have enough energy. You don't care to put the effort in. And that topic will be addressed within the other topics we'll get to very soon. If that's you, where you feel like it's just too much of a burden, I just can't, it's just whatever. We'll get to that guy. Third person, this one I think is probably a lot of people, I'm not sure if this is why you don't daven well, but many of us fit in this category. You don't know what you're saying. We don't know what words we're saying. The other day in my shiur, I mentioned the word kafuf, which comes in Maseches Baba Kama and Rashi. You remember where it was Rashi? You remember where that was? The word kafuf and Rashi? Yeah, what was Jonah? Well, that's why I attached it to. Where's the word kafuf and Rashi? Okay, also, they're excellent. Very good. That was in the Gemara, I think, even. But we're in Rashi today, saying that Beis Mabez. What Tolda involves kafuf behavior? Well, good, excellent. Ravitza, when you squat, so it means you're bending your legs. Kafuf, is that the word there? Rashi's over kafuf. I said to my shir, new, what does kafuf mean? And I got these blank stares. And I'm like, oh, you know, let me help you out with this. We said every day in davening, as Jonah pointed out. Every day in davening. And I got the same blank stares. I said, we say this bracha every day. You know what it means? Zokev kufim? No, they didn't know what it meant. Not a person in my shir. I love my shir. They're great and they're geniuses and they know Hebrew very well, usually, oftentimes. Not a person. How could you not know? You have a sitter. It says it every day. So it's no wonder when you're diving to Hashem, you feel zero connection. It's like if I was speaking Chinese in a prayer book and I learned how to say those words in the first book, the images, not even words, the pictures, which I can't, but I just read pictures. I don't know what they mean. I would have zero connection to davening. Of course I would. Have no connection. So it's no wonder, if you don't know what the words mean, that you don't connect to it at all. There's a very easy solution for this. It's very simple. First of all, buy yourself a sitter that has both English and Hebrew next to it. That would be a suggestion. Now, by the way, it's only a suggestion for someone who actually wants to learn how to daven well. Which, again, if I go back to my first point I raised, if you believe in God, that He created your soul and your eyesight and your ability to hear and everything else about you, including your beating heart, then you should want to thank Him pretty regularly. So you should buy a sitter like that. And for those of you who have a sitter, but you just feel like the words are just dry, they don't mean much to you, there are many svarim that are out there that address the tefillahs beyond just the literal meaning, but what they mean more on a deep level. Praying with fire, or pathways to prayer, or things in that nature, of Schwab on prayer. These are books that are written with the sole purpose of someone like ourselves who wants to be excited about that, but just can't get there. We don't feel it. So one way to get the feel is to know what you're talking about. And buying a book like that would probably help you. I didn't come here to pitch for you to buy Svarim. That's not what I came here for. I'm not a salesman myself, nor do I get a percentage of Michael Rose when he comes and sells them to you. I don't get a percentage of that either. But I'm going to focus much more on the other parts that I think are plaguing many of us youngsters and even us adults that live in the world. Do our tefillos matter? If I daven for something, will it matter? Am I going to change God's mind? Am I going to change myself by davening? Question, that's part number one. We're going to focus on that in a few minutes from now. I'm not a big tzaddik. I make many mistakes in many areas of my life. I can go to God and ask for things. I'm ashamed. God knows what I did last night. He only did 3 days ago. I'm going to go now and say, God, would you please give me X, Y, and Z? Could you imagine a friend of yours who you completely like rejected and threw under the bus, and the next day you ask him for a favor? You feel uncomfortable with that. So maybe you might say to yourself, who am I to go ask God for something? I can barely even keep Shabbos. I'm going to ask Him now to give a refuah shleima to someone I know. I'm going to ask Him now to create, like our last book, some miracle sukkah appearing on my porch. I can't ask Him that question. Maybe if I worked harder, if I was a bigger tzaddik, maybe I'll get there one day, but right now it's just not my place. We'll get to that point pretty soon as well. I've davened for many things in the past. It's not me talking about it. I'm just giving another suggestion why maybe you wouldn't want to be davening right now. And many times it just didn't happen what I wanted. I davened, I asked, I meant it. I poured my heart out for weeks at a time to be given a rejection or no answer at all. Not interested anymore. I've been burned. Thank you, but no thank you. Okay, that's an approach, and I get it. I understand that approach. It's not a crazy approach. The last one, which I think is probably most of us, is my guess, is I'm too lazy, or I'm too tired, or I'm too busy to really make this a serious part of my life. I'm up late at nights, or I'm not a morning person. I've got a lot on my mind right now. I want to look at the highlights from last night. I can't. There's so much going on. I just can't. And it's hard for me to really sit down and work on this. Those last four suggestions, I'm going to repeat them right now, just so you can hear them again. And we're going to go through each one of these just for a few minutes each, and hopefully leave here with a little bit of a feeling, at least, that I should want to do this better. By the way, whether you go to davening every day or not, sometimes we don't feel it. Sometimes we don't go and we do feel it. But how do I make it more a part of my life? Again, the four pieces. Do our tefillos matter? Am I changing anything when I daven? I'm not a big tzaddik. I do a lot of things wrong. I feel uncomfortable even presenting myself in front of God as if He should listen to what I have to say. I've tried and the results were not what I was looking for in the past. I'm not going for it again. And I'm too lazy, busy, or tired to take this more seriously. Do our tefillos matter? Will anything change for me davening? So I'm going to show you a source inside. You don't have to look at it, but you can if you want to. I'll read only a few words of it. It's the top source, the Gemara in Chulin, Daf Samach Mabeis, source number one. This Gemara is a Gemara I'm sure you may have heard of in the past, but the Gemara describes the seeming contradiction in the creation of the world. Rav Asi Rami, top source, again, you don't have to look inside, but I'll read quickly. Rav Asi pointed contradiction out. It says, V'totzei ha'aretz desha, b'tzlas b'shabbos, on Tuesday, the third day of the week, it says that Hashem brought forth the grass. Uksiv, and it says, kol siach hasadeh terem yeh ba'aretz. B'malei shabbos. It says, before any sort of vegetation was growing in the land, it said that on Friday. 3 days later, then it said already that the grass was growing. What sense does that make? The grass grew already Tuesday, and by Friday it hadn't yet grown. It wasn't above surface level. What's going on here? It says the Gemara the following chiddush. Malamit shiyatsu deshon v'amdu al pesach hakarka. That the grass started, it got right flush level with the actual ground. The grass was right on top, but not yet over the ground. And it waited there. Why? Ad sheba Adam Rishon, ubikish Elohim Rachamim. Till Adam Rishon himself would come down and beg Hashem, please bring rain so this would grow. Now you have a lot of questions you could ask over here. Number one is, how did Adam know even rain was helpful? How did he know that? Why would he even assume to daven? He knew what davening was? So here you see two very important things. Just like when Adam Rishon was alive, he was created, at some point he would feel a hunger pang. He would be very hungry because he didn't have food in his body. He might experiment. What do I do now? Maybe God gave him some sort of a memory chip or some sort of a brain, a light bulb in his brain that would tell him to eat something. Hashem created the same exact thing for tefillah with us. Because Adam Rishon didn't know, Hashem didn't tell him to daven, but he created a problem in the world. And Adam Rishon would walk into that problem and be like, oh my gosh, I got to daven and solve that problem. Which means that Kadosh Baruch Hu himself decided upon creation that he wants you and I to daven. And he gave us situations that bring that davening about. From the beginning of time, when man was created, he was created in order to daven. And therefore, if you wonder, do our tefillos matter at all? Clearly, Hashem felt it did. Otherwise, why not create the ground already fully in bloom? Just so you understand that every creature that was created was not, if you ask the question, what came first, the chicken or the egg? The answer is the chicken. Next time I'm going to ask you, that's the answer. Things were created in full bloom already. People were created as full-grown items. Adam was not a little baby in diapers when he was created. Why not create the trees that same way? And the grass that same way, like everything else in the world? And the answer is, because Hashem wanted us to learn that davening is crucial in our lives. From the beginning of time, he created a problem so Adam in his spiritual genes would feel the pangs of problem and would automatically reach out to God. So therefore, we see clearly from the time of creation, Hashem desires our tefillahs. Part number one. And it's natural for us. It's not something you have to like dig deep and figure out how to do it. It's part of how we were created, is to feel the need to daven. If you don't feel it today, it's only because we're less sensitive to our spiritual selves. Imagine someone, you know, had their tongue that was burned very badly, and they can't taste things because their taste buds are burned right now. That's like us with our neshama. Our neshamas are naturally feeling certain things, and if we were more in tune with it, you would be more sensitive. But because we grew up in a world where the neshama is put inside, and the group was put much on much a higher platform, for that reason, we don't sense it, we don't notice it at all. And therefore, it goes unrealized often. But Hashem is telling you, this is how you should be feeling. The need to daven is part of what I created you with. There's a concept, no atheist in a foxhole. What does that concept mean? When you push your backs against the wall, every single human being will reach out to God and cry. Everybody. Whether you're an atheist, whether you believe in that religion, every single person, when they're stuck and they have nowhere to turn to, they all know in the end of the day, deep in their hearts, there's a God. God created us with that knowledge. Do not wait for that moment to happen when we're stuck against the wall. Start now. Work towards that. The Gemara brings down, Maseches Yevamah, source number two, that Hashem loves the tefillos of tzaddikim. You know what that means? He gives us reason to daven, tzaddikim. Every single one of the avos and imos were barren. Even Yaakov Avinu, we're told, was barren. Even Leah, we're told, was barren. Leah was very fertile. How many kids did Leah have? Six. And the first one she had, it sounds like it was immediate. But if you look in the Chumash, I'll read to you inside. It's in Perek of Tes, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, in Parshas Bereishis, in Sefer Bereishis. It says, Vayar Hashem, right when they got married, Vayar Hashem kisnu aleah. Leah was the hated one of the wives. Vayivtach es rachma. What does that mean, Vayivtach es rachma? Hashem had to open up her womb. Why? She was barren. Why would she be barren but never realize her barrenness? She was fertile myrtle. She from day one, she had children. Where was her barrenness? Why did God not let her realize she was barren first? Again, Vayivtach es rachma implies that until now it was closed. I mean, Hashem created her to be barren, but when she got married, she had kids right away. Why make her barren? So the reason why we have problems in life, this is what the Gemara in Yevamos brings down, Hashem loves the tefillos of tzaddikim. Hashem loves it. And therefore, He gave us problems. So we dive into Him. But here's the catch. Leah had bigger problems, at least she thought, than this. She thought she was going to marry the biggest monster in the world, which is Esav. And if you look, when it describes Rachel and Leah, it says that Rachel was beautiful, and it says Leah, what's about Leah, what did it say about her? She had soft eyes, Einei Rakot, which sounds like a nice thing, right? Oh, you got nice soft eyes you got there. I don't know what that means, but it sounds like a nice thing. But it wasn't a nice thing. You know what it meant? It meant that she cried so much her eyelashes fell out. She was ugly. She had ugly eyes. You know why she cried so much? Because she was davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu before she ever got married, don't give me the monster. Everyone said, you're going to marry Esav. Don't give me the monster. But you know what happens when she davened so much before she got married? There's no reason to be barren anymore. The whole purpose of being barren was so she would daven. But she already was davening. There's no need to create problems when I'm already davening. And therefore, Leah beat, quote-unquote, God's brought her to the punch. And Hashem opens her womb up. I don't need to keep you barren. You're already doing the job you're supposed to be doing. And therefore, if you think about that for a minute, what you realize is right now my life is good. Things are good in my life. Don't wait for problems to arise to start to daven. Daven immediately. Thanking Hashem. Ask Hashem for it to continue. If you act that way, Hashem doesn't bring things in your life to make you give you a hard time about it. Start now. Daven for things already right now. But you see over here that certainly davening has an impact because Baruch Hu wants us to daven. I'm going to go to the next part pretty quickly, fast forward to the next part, but I'm going to read the source inside, I'll read it outside for you. The Gemara Kiddushin of Chavtas Mabez, highly recommend that you take a peek at it later on. The Gemara tells a story over of a rabbi who came to town, and the town he came to was haunted by demons, especially this very nasty seven-headed dragon demon. And it was so nasty that no matter what you did to that demon, usually if you went in pairs and you went in the daytime, you were safe from any of these mazikin, but not this mazik, this was super mazik. And no matter what you did, he would get you. And Abaye, who was the rav of that town, tells everyone, when this rabbi, his name is Rav Yaakov. Rav Yaakov went to town, source number 3, and Rav Yaakov, when he came, Abaye heard he was coming, and Abaye tells his entire constituency, all of his Talmidim, no one invite this rav to your house, lock your doors, make him sleep in the base medrash with the demon. Because maybe, just maybe, a miracle will happen and the demon will die because this Rav Yaakov is so chashuv, Hashem will protect Rav Yaakov and kill the demon. And that's what happens. Everyone closes the shutters. No one invites him in. He sleeps with the demon. The demon comes to him like a seven-headed serpent. That's how it appears to him in the middle of the night in the base medrash. And you can imagine that's a pretty scary sight. He starts to daven and shuckles. And every time he shuckles and he does a bow, one head gets lopped off. He bowed 7 times, now he has a zero-headed serpent, it's not so scary, there's no heads, it's just not, you know, it's not so scary anymore. And he wins, and the next day he goes to the community, he goes to Abaye, he says, I can't believe you did this to me. I could have died if a miracle didn't happen on my behalf. That's the story. The Marsha tells over the following question he asks. Listen very closely about this right now, it's a tremendous chiddush, but it's so extremely powerful. The Marsha suggests, how could Abaye do that to Rav Yaakov? It was a lose-lose situation. If a miracle doesn't happen, then the rabbi is killed. This over here, by the way, is in source number 4 on the sheet. You don't have to look at it right now, but you can look at it later on. If a miracle does happen, he loses chuyos. Which means if God decides to save your life, he's going to take some of your spiritual power that you have coming to Rein Shamayim. He's going to trade it in for a miracle. So lose-lose. Either he's dead, or he has less olam haba when this whole day is over. That's the question that he asked in Abaye. And the Marsha says the following tremendous kiddush. He says it's not a lose-lose. It's a lose-win. It could be a loss. It could be a win. He's definitely not going to die, says the Marsha. Hashem will protect him. Either Hashem, he doesn't see the serpent coming, and therefore Hashem has to kill the serpent to save his life with a miracle, and therefore he loses Chorus and Shemayim. That might actually happen. But the second option is, he davens for it. And if he davens Hashem to protect him, that's not called a miracle. What do you think happens when you daven for things? Hashem answers you. That's not called a miracle. That's like if I go to a store and I get my credit card and they swipe and they give me now my food I wanted to have. Whoa, a piece of plastic just got me all that food? No. You have a bill to pay later on. It's not a miracle that you can give them a card and you swipe it and you get your stuff afterwards. That's normal. When you daven for things, it's completely normal for it to happen. It's not called nes anymore, says the Marsha. Even a seven-headed dragon attacking you, you daven for it? It's not called a miracle. What do you think happens when you daven for things? Things like that happen. You're saved. But it's not called a miracle. I go at the end of a work week, and I find in my box, I find a check made out to me. Miracle, it's not a miracle. I worked, and I get a check when I work. When you daven, things come your way also. And therefore, it's expected. But maybe you'll tell me, that's very nice, but that's when you're a tzaddik. It's only when you're a tzaddik. If you're a regular person, it doesn't happen that way. If you're a regular person, you know, our tefillos aren't going to matter that much. So I'll just demonstrate to you, if I can, why I think that's a flawed argument. I'm going to read to you a very moving piece, and you've probably heard it beforehand. And we know this already from the standpoint of the Bible, so it's not going to be so exciting for us. But think for a second, pretend it wasn't Rachel Imenu. Pretend it was like an average, regular woman. Now, Rachel Imenu, we know, is the queen of our davening. Kever Rachel is a place people go to, they flock to daven. But Rachel Imenu was not always a great davener. As a matter of fact, if you look inside the Chumash, in Perek Lamed, in Bereishis, Pasuk Aleph, Bet, and then Gimel. After Leah was having all these children, and Rachel was not, so it says that Rachel comes to Yaakov, and she's got a tain on him. She was jealous of her sister. But Torah Yaakov, how many banim? Give me children, Yaakov. If not, Mesanochi, I'm like, I'm dead. But Yaakov upset with Rachel. But Yomra, Tachas Elokim Anochi? What are you calling me for? Am I God? Asher Manami Mech Pribatan, did I keep child from you? What are you looking at me for? What does that imply? She had not yet gone to God completely in daven for this. How does she become the greatest davener for us? So much of the Medrash in Eicha tells us that every single one of the Avos was and Andy Maus and other famous members of our history were approached by God when he was destroying us. And each one said, I can't argue to defend them, except for Rachel. Look inside source number 5. And don't picture Rachel, picture a regular woman. Bo'os HaShoah, that moment in time when God is about to destroy everybody. Kafsa Rachel Imenu Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rachel jumps up in front of God and says, "Ribono Sholem." Source number 5. Galoy lefanecha Yaakov adcha havani, ava yisera v'ava bishvili v'ava sheva shanim. You know that Yaakov Avinu loved me, wanted to marry me. He worked for me for 7 years, and when the time came up of running through as quickly, it was my time to get married. I knew my father was going to pull a stunt. He was going to switch me with Leah, and I told Yaakov that was going to happen. We made a whole strategy. Simanim, we're going to protect it. But then she said, I felt bad. Rechamti alachusi, I'm right in the middle of this piece. I felt bad for my sister. She shouldn't be embarrassed. And that night, we switched places. I gave her my husband. I gave her the signs. So you think it was me? Listen to those words. V'lo'od, listen to the following line. This is her beloved. V'lo'od, and I shouldn't say it's probably on tape because it's a little bit graphic. Shenichnasti tachas amita, shayashochev imachusi. I went under the bed. They slept in that night together. Yaakov and Leah, I went underneath the bed, hid underneath it. I am a daber ima, and Yaakov would speak the hisho sekes, and Leah wouldn't say a word because the voices weren't the same. But ani mishivato, and I responded. Could you imagine a woman who gives up her husband to be to the sister, and then has to be in the bedroom while they're consummating their marriage and is pretending like she is the one that he's with? This is Rachel gave everything up. In order so they wouldn't recognize my voice. I did a chesed, says Rachel, and I was not jealous of what was happening around me. I did it because I thought it was the right thing to do. She said, back to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Uma ani, 5 lines from the bottom. Shani basar v'dam. I'm a regular person. Offer of Ephra, I've come from dirt and I'll return to dirt one day in my life. Lo kinesi letzara shli. I didn't, wasn't jealous of that action. I felt it was the right thing to do. I didn't embarrass her. Ata melech chai v'kayam rachman. You're the king. What are you jealous of? That I serve idols? That I do things wrong? Big deal. That idols are nothing. You know they're nothing. Have mercy on me. That's Rachel's tefillah. Not the tefillah of a tzaddik. Tefillah of someone who's saying, we are doing things wrong. We're serving idols. And it said, the last line, miyad nizgaglu rachman shekadosh baruch hu. Immediately Hashem's rachman comes back. And he saves us. He's not saving tzaddikim. He's saving rishayim. And therefore, I'm not telling God, I deserve to be answered because I don't deserve to be answered. I've done nothing, God, to warrant the life that you've given me. We say in Kippur davening, Afar ani b'chayai kal v'chor b'nitzasi. I'll offer my life, I'm offering now, and I'm dead as well. I'm nothing. I wasn't worthy of creating. True. But still have mercy on me. I don't have to be a tzaddik to ask for help. I'm in Russia. I'm begging you to find favor in my eyes, like Rachel found, her sister found favor in her eyes. Don't be jealous of my bad actions. I love you more than anything, God, in the world. I just get confused sometimes. What happens when we daven sometimes, we don't get what answer we're looking for? And that's painful. Things that you daven for are really hard. Only a few minutes left, so I'll run through the rest of it quickly. So number one, you think you know what's best for you. You think you know. And you're right to think that you know. But we have no idea what's best for us. I'm not a country music fan. I actually don't like country music at all. My parents happen to like it. And they told me there's a song written by Garth Brooks called Unanswered Prayers. Look later on if you want online. You can see the lyrics for it. It's about how he met up with his high school girlfriend when he was already married with kids. He saw her again. And he's like, and he said, I prayed for this girl to be my wife. He's like, thank God that he didn't answer my prayers. You think you know what's best. You know what you want it to be. But it could be we're wrong. Could be that the world that we see is not what's supposed to be. Could be that the death, love, and God forbid, might have tremendous ramifications and help in Shemayim in ways I can't describe or imagine myself even. We have no idea the cheshbonos of heaven. So what we think, it's wrong. How can it be? God didn't listen to my prayers. God is doing what's best for us all the time. It's in our best interest things that happen, assuming we daven for those things the right way. And therefore, when something happened that didn't go well, it still wasn't ignored. It was stored up, as we say, you don't keep davening, in a node, in a special container. And at the right time, it will spill out. At the right time. Here's a quick example of that. And then I'll end off with one last point and bring it home. There was a time when my son was in the dentist chair. I told this story before to my shir. My son was in the dentist chair one time. Regular checkup. He was about 6, 7 years old. And the dentist checked and he had some cavity and it was pretty bad. But it was also a tooth that was a baby tooth. And he said, I can either fill the cavity or I can pull the tooth. My son can understand English and he heard that line. And he said, I want to go home, Dad. Abba, take me home. I'm ready to go back to my room and stay there for a long time. I don't want a tooth pulled. And the doctor says to me, listen, Avi, you know, just sit down in the chair, hold him in your arms, and I'll just yank a tooth out. Again, my son understands English. And this was all said in English. And he understands Hebrew better than I do, and it was said in English anyways. He looks at me like Abba, like, that's funny, like, take me home. And I'm like, you know, Eliyahu, like, I'm going to sit down in the chair. I'm going to hold you down. It'll take us 5 seconds, and everything's going to be fine afterwards. With horror in his eyes, don't you love me? How could you? Dad, take me home, please, Dad. He's screaming. I'm like, grabbed that kid and yanked it out, and then it was over. Now, do I love my son more than anything in the world? I want him to be the best and healthiest possible. And the tooth wasn't good for him to have. As a 7-year-old kid, you can't fathom how your father could love you while still grabbing you down strong, while some cruel person with pliers pulls your tooth out. But we as adults understand better. We don't understand what God does us often. We feel like we're in that chair and there's someone with a torturing device and they're yanking things off our bodies. And it's right to think that. But you have a very limited perspective in the world. I'm not claiming I know reasons behind things, but I just know that we don't know reasons behind things. And the last point we raise, and I'll end with this, is I'm too tired, lazy, or busy to take it seriously. So much more I want to say, but I don't have time. I asked my wife last night, I'm schmoozing, and she goes to me, it's way too long. She's right. I'm going to end it in 1 minute from now. I heard a schmooze over one of my adult students. I teach at nighttime, sent me a shiur from every friend from about 10 years ago. And there's a line there that he said that I want to share with you as my parting words. To explain to you davening, how davening should work, how we should work on ourselves, minyan, and everything like that. You'll hear later on from Rabbi Zinkin and other speeches we're going to hear very soon as well. Anyone here, firstborn male? Okay. Pigeon of Ben's? Anyone have Pigeon of Ben done to them? How many? One, two. Two Pigeon of Ben's? Three Pigeon of Ben's we have in this room. Okay. When you were, three of you were being pigeoned by your fathers, so the Kohen, who is the one who has to accept the pigeon, says to your father the following line, Ma ba'istfei, which means in Aramaic, what do you want more? Your child? Or five slug? Which one do you choose? So my friend says, obviously, no one has ever said, you know what? You keep the baby, I'll take the $5. Like, we'll call it a day. That's a good deal. No one's done that. At least not to a firstborn. They didn't do it for, at least. So my friend joked, not my joke, by the way. He said it. Anyways, he says, it's not a question only that moment in the pigeon of Ben. That's a question for your entire life. Ma ba'istfei. What do you want more? You want to have your child, or you want to have your money? What do you want more? When you get older, you're going to have to make decisions in life. What do you value more, your family or your business? It's a question you're going to have to deal with all the time. You might be lazy, and you might be tired. You might be having a bad week. At the end of the day, what do you value more? The fact that you are a creation of the Creator, or that you're hungry, or that you're tired? What do you value more? You're going to have to struggle with this question for everything in your life, not just davening or davening with a minion. If you choose to act based upon your stomach, you put a check in the box, I was at davening ready, so I can go out tonight. Ma b'ist fei. That's what you want from this world? That's what you're hoping for? That's a fail. I had one time in my life, I had a stretch about a week, I davened well, for 1 week of my life. I davened okay, but I had 1 week when I davened like, I felt like I was in Shemayim every time I davened. And it started with a fast day. Because I was really hungry. And I didn't want to stand up for Shemona Esrei, I was so hungry. It was during the summer season, it was a long fast day. I said to myself, am I going to let my body make decisions for me, or am I going to let my Neshama make decisions for me? I will fight through this, I will leave my body for this tefillah, I'll let my body hold me back, and I'm going to daven without body right now. And I closed my eyes, and I kid you not, and I saw myself, I know it sounds weird to say, I saw myself leave my body, my neshama, and I was like, mamish, like davening as a neshama. And it lasted me for about a week. And then it went away, and I haven't got it back since then. But what I did was I said, ma ba'istfei. What do I care about more? My body, my hunger, my stomach, or doing what the Creator of the world wants me to do? To recap what we said up till now, there's a number of things that we wanted to explain that are hard for us. We're tired. We're hungry. We don't feel it sometimes. If you understood that tefillah made a difference, maybe you daven more. It makes a difference. Hashem gave us tefillah from the beginning, the Marsha and Kiddushin. Doesn't have to be tzaddikim. Rachel says, we cheat on you, God. Still forgive us for it. It's not only tzaddikim that Hashem this works for. It works for anyone and everyone. The fact that we're too lazy and we're too tired. Ma ba'istvei. What means most to you? That you should have a good meal? Actually, a little sleep? And you tried in the past, you don't even know what it means to be answered properly. You don't understand how much God gives us, how much how many gifts He gives us. And even sometimes when we're not answered right, it is the right answer for us anyways. It's a hard thing to do, but I'll give you the following bracha. You should merit this year particularly to work on this topic. Buy yourself English. Go and prepare for it properly. And Mishnah Shem, you should be zocha to start. When you don't feel it, it's part of life. But at least work on it. And say Kodesh Baruch Hu, the first six words you say in davening, Hashem Svasai Tivtach. You ask Hashem, please help me feel it better. Have a good day.